right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we're talking about Bones and All, the new film from Luca Guadagnino, starring Timothy Chalamet and Taylor Russell as a pair of cannibals who are in love on a road trip across the country. It's a weird one, and one that I really, really liked, and we have a great conversation coming up, lots of great puzzle pieces. Joining me is Josie DeMarco, who has been in the Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces group, gave us some awesome puzzle pieces over the last few months that I read on the trailer episodes, and I'm happy to have her here on the show. She has a YouTube channel, which she'll tell you about during the episode, so make sure to check out her stuff, and that conversation's coming up here in a second. Before we get to it, I do want to remind you, as always, to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. You can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser or Good Pods. And, of course, follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. And there's the Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces group. Don't forget about that, too. We'll be starting some trivia nights soon in there, which it's going to be a lot of fun. So if you want to join a group of really awesome people who love talking about movies with no trolls allowed, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces on Facebook. So with that said, let's talk about Bones and All. All right, we've got Josie DeMarco with us today. Josie, how are you doing?
I am doing well. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, I'm happy to finally have you on. We've talked about having you on over in the Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces group. And to talk about a weird one like Bones and All seems like a good one to dig into.
Absolutely.
There'll be a lot to talk about here.
Yeah,
for sure.
What I love about Bones and All is how empathetic it is. Mm-hmm. Towards people who would otherwise be viewed as monsters. And
sure.
Aesthetically, I love how it looks like a film from the 80s.
Mm.
And especially with the Reznor and Ross score only adding to that feeling. And the performances by Taylor Russell and Timothy Chalamet are excellent. They bring so much humanity and vulnerability. The screenplay is just so clever with the way it utilizes the rules of the cannibals. Mm. For that reason alone, in addition to just the humanization, it deserves a Best Adapted Screenplay nomination at the Oscars, 1,000%.
Oh, I would absolutely agree with that. And we'll get into it as we're getting through like pieces and stuff like that. But there is so much that I loved about this movie. And
me too.
It's also certainly one of the most unique movies of the year. So, I mean,
it
it's
really
got that
is.
Going on top of everything you were just saying. It's
it
got
really
that going
is.
For it.
Like,
so. Well, you know, before we get too deep into it, it is your first time on the show. Why don't you tell my listeners a little about you and what you do?
My name is Josie DeMarco. I have my own YouTube channel, full name Josephine DeMarco, and I do movie reviews and I recite poetry that I write. And what I like to do is kind of like what David does, where I like to sort of pair newer movies and older movies because, like, I want to show. I want to bridge the gap between the old and the new to show people that, you know, the story of cinema is the same story over and over again.
It's true. It's true. A lot of these same themes are going to just keep coming up. And the way I like to look at it is that's a good thing because it's just storytelling.
It
so it's some people will look at it in a negative light. And I'm like, no, you're missing the point. The point is these are amazing stories. And for a filmmaker to come along and throw a little spin on it, that's an awesome place for something to start off.
And
so
I have, and on my Instagram and TikTok, follow me on Instagram at Positive Poems, where I have poems that I write. I upload them like from TikTok.
Mm-hmm. The one social media site that I don't spend all day on, but
I probably
should.
I don't know. I don't look on TikTok because I'm sorry. I don't want to. I mean, I use TikTok to promote my writing, but I don't look at other people's TikToks because I'm sorry. I don't want to see someone's ass in my face.
Yeah, that seems to be what the majority of it is. But yeah. So, yeah. On that note, let's get back to the movie. Let's talk about Bones and All. I think, you know, we should start this off talking about Guadagnino. Are you a fan of his other films, Call Me By Your Name and Suspiria and everything?
Yeah, I remember liking Suspiria and Call Me By Your Name, I love the book so much. Mm. And the movie is a very faithful adaptation. And his scenery in his films is just gorgeous. Mm. And I have yet to see a bigger splash, but I intend to soon. Yeah. But yeah, I like Guadagnino. Yeah. I do too.
And Call Me By Your Name is fantastic. And I really like Suspiria. I mean, it's obviously, it's a huge undertaking to try to remake something like that, you know, beloved. Yeah. But I think he puts his own stamp on it, and all the performances are so damn good in it. And
Yeah,
so I was definitely looking forward to this, and it's such an interesting concept to have this love story between cannibals. It's especially, people are very touchy nowadays when it comes to, like, you know, kind of out there concepts like this. And I was a little worried that people were not going to receive it well, like, you know, oh, I can't watch a movie like that. And I don't know, I feel like most people are kind of enjoying this movie for what it is.
I think because, like I was saying, because it's so humanistic.
Mm-hmm.
Even with Mark Rylance's character, as sadistic as he is, you do, like, there are layers to his character.
Yeah. No, absolutely. There definitely is. And, you know, our main two performances here, Taylor Russell and Timothy Chalamet, I mean, they're kind of our entrance into this world of cannibalism. And, you know, they're both just so damn good in it. And, you know, two of the best, like, young actors working right now.
Absolutely.
I remember her in Waves. That movie was so good.
Oh, yeah.
So it's exciting to see stuff like this happening. But there's plenty we'll have to talk about the movie along the way. Why don't we start digging into some pieces here? Okay. What do you have for your first puzzle piece?
It's no surprise that my first puzzle piece is Kathryn Bigelow's 1987 vampire flick, Near Dark.
Yeah.
I made this comparison in my out of the theater reaction on TikTok. And I'm not the first person to make this connection. In fact, a few people already have. In fact, I think there was one critic who called it Near Dark for a Generation. Mm-hmm. Both the cannibals in Bones and All and the vampire gangs in Near Dark live as drifting vagabonds.
Yeah.
Bill Paxton's character and Mark Rylance's character are both sadistic and somewhat sympathetic characters, because they do terrible things, but deep down they want to be valued and accepted by others.
Yeah. They're looking for that community within this weird world.
Neither vampirism nor cannibalism are depicted as lifestyles to necessarily envy in either of these films. They're essentially diseases.
Yeah.
Just as the vampires have to drink blood to survive, the eaters have to eat to survive.
Yeah.
And just as Near Dark is considered by some, I think even Kathryn Bigelow herself in one of the commentaries tracks, to be an allegory of drug addiction, Bones and All has had similar interpretations.
Mm.
On the next Best Picture podcast, Matt Neglia, Dan Baer, and Zoe Rose Bryant, they pointed out that it could be looked at as an allegory of the AIDS crisis in the 1980s.
Okay.
And, like, people losing someone to AIDS.
Yeah, I could see where that comparison would come up.
And I love both soundtracks to these movies. The soundtrack in Near Dark by Tangerine Dream is the perfect mix of, no pun intended, dreamy and moody.
Mm.
And most of all, both films at their core are love stories about people lost in their lives during crossroads.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I haven't seen Near Dark since, like, I was a teenager. It's been forever. And I don't recall the score. I need to, like, go back. I need to rewatch it anyway, but I need to hear that score again, because, I mean, Tangerine Dream scores are always awesome. But I was going to save this first puzzle piece that I'm going to bring up for later. But since you're talking about a 1987 vampire movie, I guess I'll bring this one up now. And that is The Lost Boys, another 1987 vampire movie.
Great pick.
Yeah. Again, that setting of, like, Reagan era 80s, you know, and not setting it you know, nowadays or anything like that. Setting it back then, and this kind of like underground network of these people who all find each other in that movie. They're vampires in this movie, they're cannibals, but they're living on the outskirts. They're underground, and you know, obviously they're not going to fit in normal society, but they find each other and they make connections with each other and help each other out, or in some cases are dangerous to one another. And so they never feel safe no matter who they connect with, but at the same time, they need to have something to connect with. And so both of these movies really seem to have that. And like you were just saying with Near Dark, I think it fits with all three of them.
And what you're saying, and back to the community thing, another thing that Lost Boys, Near Dark have that Bonesong has too is there's like sort of like a hierarchy of vampires and cannibals.
Yeah, absolutely. Which I guess you would imagine if something like this happened in the real world, you know, that somebody would take charge. I guess it would happen.
Like what Michael Stuhlbarg saying, like there's before bones and all, and there's after bones and all, kind of like you're not a true cannibal until bones and all.
Yeah. Which, by the way, Michael Stuhlbarg, my favorite, maybe my favorite performance of the year.
You
like that's how good he is in this.
You know, I was wondering, like, if somebody, like, if someone did, what if someone choked on a bone?
Yeah. I know. I mean, that's why they all need friends. Like they need someone to help them out when that happens. But yeah, seriously, I don't see how that could possibly work. But in the movie, it works, I guess. So.
Or like Mama Cass, Mamas and the Papas, but like choked on a hamburger, choked on a human burger.
There you go. There you go. That sounds like a way to go for sure. But what do you have for your next puzzle piece?
My next puzzle piece is I'm a Cyborg, But That's Okay, directed by Park Chan-wook.
Okay.
In the film, a girl named Cha Young has a delusion that she's a cyborg and she's institutionalized. And she starves herself. She speaks to inanimate objects. She also has this bad habit of physically harming herself. Mental illness seems to run in Cha Young's family, for her grandmother, whom she was very close with, had a delusion she was a mouse. And a lot of her problems stem from losing the grandmother she was so close with. Cha Young even keeps her grandmother's dentures. And at the mental hospital, Cha Young meets a schizophrenic kleptomaniac patient named Il Sun. He has a delusion that he could steal other people's souls. The two fall in love. It's a charming love story with very funny surrealist elements. Someone on Letterboxd described it as a South Korean version of Amelie set in a psychiatric ward.
There you go. There's some puzzle pieces.
The fantasies these characters have in their psychotic minds are quite hilarious. And this is the most colorful, eye-popping production design I've ever seen of a movie set in a mental hospital. Seriously, the color palette is insane. Like Bones and all, the lovers in Cyborg bond over what makes them misunderstood outcasts in society, which is their mental illness. And there's a hill shot in I'm a Cyborg, But That's Okay, that's very similar to the hill shot in Bones and all. Like finding connections with someone who is equally considered like inhuman.
Yeah. Absolutely. I've never actually seen that movie, but it sounds fantastic. And
it's not streaming anywhere, but try to see if it's at a library.
Yeah. I mean, his movies
see,
are great.
This is why physical media is important.
Yeah, exactly. That is why they're important. So, yeah, I'm going to have to check that one out.
All right. What's your next piece?
My next piece, I am going to go with something I just watched for the first time yesterday, specifically for this podcast, because I had seen so many people mention it as, something that is most likely a big influence on this film. And that's Terrence Malick's Badlands, which I had never seen. And honestly is one of the best movies I've ever seen. Like that's how much I love it.
It's gorgeous.
It's incredible.
I mean, it's such a great debut.
Yeah. Yeah. The fact that that was his first movie is ridiculous. And like, it's not just the cinematography and like those amazing shots, but like The story is fantastic. The dialogue is incredible. It's so original and so unique, even though, you know, you could certainly draw a line back to like a Bonnie and Clyde type thing or something.
Yeah,
like
and it is inspired from a true story.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Which, of course, Bones and All is not. Yeah. I mean, there's Armie Hammer, but that's not, you know, that's neither here nor there.
That's just, I think that's just pure coincidence.
Yes, I think so too. Yeah.
But the performances from Sissy Spacek and Martin Sheen are wonderful. Yeah. And
so good.
Fun fact, Sissy Spacek's husband was a production designer on that movie.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
There you go. That's pretty cool. But yeah, I think you could just draw like a straight line from that to here. And it two incredible, very unique love stories that are just out there.
And both had landscape cinematography.
Yes, definitely.
This isn't a puzzle piece, but I wonder if Luca Guadagnino was in any way influenced by Wim Wenders when
oh,
making
sure.
this. Because like Paris, Texas, and that involves drifters and I've yet to see it, but Kings of the Road.
Mm. Yeah, Paris, Texas did come to mind for me, actually, because of some of those shots and stuff like that. Yeah, I didn't include it on my list
either. Because the plot-wise, it's obviously very different, but it's just stylistically.
If we both thought about it, I'm putting it on the official list, but we won't include it in the main conversation. But yeah, that's funny that we both thought of it, but didn't actually include it. So
okay. That's
cool. What do you got next, though?
My next piece is actually a short story by Mark Twain. Called Cannibalism in the Cars.
Okay.
And it's a frame narrative with two men on a train. And one of them is a congressman. He tells a story about being stuck on a train during a major snowstorm. He talks about he and his fellow congressmen resorted to cannibalism for survival. And they did it by holding elections for candidates to eat. And it has a signature Mark Twain satirical wit. Cannibalism is a metaphor here as well, but in a different context, though it's more so about socioeconomic structures and class struggle, though you can make that argument with Bones and All, since it takes place during the Reagan era. And there does seem to be, in some scenes of Bones and All, some socioeconomic commentary, like with, I guess, I wouldn't call it a full rating of the store, but you get what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And like people are desperate, basically.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's interesting. I find that, cause I don't know anything about that story. But I find it really interesting. You bringing that one up because like I was saying earlier at the beginning of the conversation that I was worried that people would like maybe reject a story about cannibalism, you know, but cannibalism is a metaphor. I mean, why not? Like it's in so many things.
I mean, and I think the reason why we're seeing it as a trend in films today, there's a reason for it. Because if you look at the history of socioeconomics, people feed off of each other.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that we are heading towards more of that, I feel like. But that's another conversation for another time. But
yeah,
things are a little bleak, though. But at least we have good movies. So
yeah.
I'll go to my next piece. And I had said that you could draw a line from Badlands to Bones and All. I think you would maybe take a detour along that line for 1994's Natural Born Killers.
You know, I still haven't seen that one yet.
Oh, I think I didn't even really like it that much back when it came out. I thought it was like, I get it. You know, like that's kind of where I went with it. I rewatched it a couple years ago and I really loved it. I thought the satirical elements of it just really stood out as, you know, these two people who are just so starved for attention and for fame, and this is the way they go about getting it. And that is definitely not what Bones and All is. Bones and All is more of just...
I think that's why, I mean, I haven't seen Natural Born Killers yet, but I know it's a Lovers on the Run movie like Badlands, but...
Sure.
I didn't watch it for this because it would... because, like, I know it's a little bit about, like, fame and fortune. That's not what Bonson All's about. So I decided not to.
There's definitely things where it's got different sights in mind with what it's going after with the story, but still the mix of a love story and violence. I felt it does deserve a little bit of a place here on the list.
And because they're on the run, maybe the travel aspect.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, I definitely think it feels like a more vital film now with the way, you know, with social media and people's like, you know, constant craving of attention and validation, you know, it definitely feels like a better movie to watch now.
Yeah. They can't like feel like they're human unless they're like a validated human being unless they have the approval from social media, but that ironically makes you a robot.
Yeah, basically.
Well, I still have, again, I still have yet to watch Natural Born Killers, but I'll keep that in mind when watching it.
Awesome. What do you got for your next piece?
My next piece. Okay. I know this is, Bones and All is definitely not as whimsical as this film I'm about to mention.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're talking lovers on the run and in like the natural setting, like the outdoors, I'm talking about Wes Anderson's Moonrise Kingdom.
Nice. All right.
They're both coming of age stories about lovers on the run. They both feature characters who are outcasts in their worlds. They're misunderstood. And like I'm a cyborg, but that's okay. It touches on mental illness. And as we mentioned earlier, cannibalism is Marin and Lee's disease. And in both films, the lovers are most free when they're outside in the wilderness.
Absolutely. They both also share that two people who can't possibly get anything from their families or from,
yes,
they don't really have families, friends, anything. It's
I thought about that too.
Yeah, it's only each other.
Families.
Yeah, they only can get any kind of support or love or anything from each other. And so that just makes for such a bigger love story, you know? So I think that that's a great one. And also, I would love to see, Wes Anderson hasn't done anything like in the world of like horror or horror adjacent. And I would love to see that.
He is a really big fan of Rosemary's Baby.
Okay, so maybe we'll get it eventually. I mean, I think that it would be a really interesting direction for him to take with a future project.
Even if it's not like a full on horror movie, but like Halloween themed,
mm-hmm,
like maybe if it involved like witches or wizards.
Yeah, that'd be fun. I could see that.
All right, what's your next piece?
I will go with a movie that I have said many times on the show that I don't like, but I know a lot of other people do like it. And I'm going to go with Dr. Sleep, the Mike Flanagan, Stephen King sequel.
I haven't seen Dr. Sleep, but my brother doesn't like it.
I agree with your brother. but the main villain of the movie is Rebecca Ferguson's character, Rose the Hat. And her performance reminds me a lot of what Mark Rylance is doing here with his character, Sully. He's just this like weird on the outskirts, kind of creepy, vaguely threatening presence until he eventually actually is very, you know, threatening and evil. But the whole time building up, you're like not quite sure what is this person trying to do. And they just keep popping up along the way. And the way that the two of them kind of approach their characters, I feel there's a pretty big comparison, I think, that could be made between Rose the Hat and Sully.
Yeah, I haven't seen Dr. Sleep, but my brother, I remember him saying he did not like it. And then one of my friends said that even though they were not a fan of the movie, they liked Rebecca Ferguson's performance a lot.
I think she's the best part of the movie for sure. And yeah.
Okay, so my next piece is another Lovers on the Run film. David Lynch's Wild at Heart.
Okay, this is actually a David Lynch film that I haven't seen yet.
Oh, this is a good one. of course, it's the story of Sailor, played by Nick Cage, and Lula, played by Laura Dern. Sailor returns from prison after killing in a self-defense situation. He and Lula reunite. Lula's mother, Diane Ladd, played by Diane Ladd, who's Laura Dern's real-life mother, assigns a hitman with some other odd folks to kill Sailor because she does not approve of their union. And just like how Mark Rylance is a maniac in Bones and All, calling Willem Dafoe's character a psycho is an understatement. He plays his character named Bobby Peru. And he's
I think that could be said for most Willem Dafoe roles, but you know.
Yeah, he reminds me of Mark Rylance's character.
Yeah.
They're both crazy in different ways, but both characters stand out visually. Mark Rylance with the ponytail.
Uh-huh.
And Willem Dafoe with the weird Jaws-like teeth.
Oh, boy. What a fantastic cast.
I want you to watch Wild at Heart, and then let me know what you think, especially of Willem Dafoe's teeth.
Oh, I cannot wait. Yeah, that is like seriously such a great cast. Though all those people, I cannot believe I've never seen it, but I'm going to watch it and I cannot wait for those teeth.
It was a Palme d'Or winner.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those movies, kind of like Badlands, like I said, I just watched for the first time. One of those movies, it's always been on my list. I just never got around to it.
Yeah. And out of all the Lovers on the Run movies, I chose this, in addition to Moonrise Kingdom, I chose this one. Because both this and Bones and All sort of take place in heightened realities.
Mm, yeah.
And both couples try to live the best they can under the most hellish circumstances. Mm-hmm. Whether they can actually physically survive in these worlds is a question for another day.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's interesting, yeah, because it's so beautifully shot that it feels like our world, but at the same time, like, you know, there's roving gangs of cannibals, like, you know, it's definitely heightened. So Well, I will go with my final puzzle piece, which we've already talked about vampires on this, but I felt like I needed to include the Twilight series on my puzzle piece list. These are very pretty people, and they're in very deeply in love, and they are maybe not supernatural vampires, but they're, you know, not too far off, like we've discussed with some of our other puzzle pieces. And so I felt like it really fits. And just like the metaphor of just how deeply and how difficult it can be to be in love when you're young. I think that is something that is what Twilight's all about, really. And that is something that is captured here as well in Bones and All.
And you can also make that connection with Let the Right One In.
Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking about Let the Right One In too while making my list. I didn't include it, but definitely you can include that there as well.
You know what's funny? Before Twilight, before Twilight came out, or like around time Twilight came out, I wondered, could vampires get AIDS? But I didn't realize that. You know, they're already dead.
Yeah, they're already dead, so I guess they don't have to worry about it. So. So you have one more piece.
Yeah, and it's actually a poem by Edna St. Vincent Millay. And the themes of this poem are similar to the film. It's called Love Is Not All. It is not meat nor drink. Okay, that's the first line. Love is not all. It is not meat nor drink, nor slumber nor a roof against the rain, nor yet a floating spar to mend that sink. And rise and sink and rise and sink again. Love cannot fill the thickened lung with breath, nor clean the blood, nor set the fractured bone. Yet many a man is making friends with death, even as I speak, for lack of love alone. It well may be that in a different hour, pinned down by pain and moaning for release, or nagged by want, past resolution's power, it might be driven to sell your love for peeps, or trade the memory of this night for food. It well may be, I do not think I would.
Now I can absolutely see the combination of elements in there that would draw you to include that as a piece here. I like that a lot. That is really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I come from a literary background, so
yeah. No, that's really cool. I like that. That's a great piece to go out on. That is a great place for us to wrap it up. I will read down our list of puzzle pieces here for the finished puzzle. We talked about Near Dark, The Lost Boys, I'm a Cyborg, But That's Okay, Badlands, we threw Paris, Texas in there, Cannibalism in the Cars, Natural Born Killers, Moonrise Kingdom, Dr. Sleep, Wild at Heart, Twilight, We included Let the Right One In, and then Love Is Not All, which, like I said, a really interesting way to tie that all up, and a really interesting list of puzzle pieces here. A lot of Lovers on the Run, of course.
This was a lot of fun doing this with you. We should do this again.
Yeah, I would love to. Do you have any like closing thoughts on Bones and All? Anything we didn't quite get to while going through puzzle pieces?
Yeah. So as far as like what the cannibalism is a metaphor for, it could be a metaphor for wanting to fill a place within one's soul, feeling lost, feel the hunger for something more out of life.
Sure. I feel like it could be that, but it could be so many things, and that's part of
it's you can write a whole list of what the cannibalism could be an allegory for.
Yeah, and I think that's some of the most exciting things in a movie is when you know you really don't have that clear answer, and there are a lot of things that you can kind of fill in the blank there with, and they all feel right and they all feel fully realized, and that's part of what I think makes this movie so successful. But also, you know, kind of to take it back to the puzzle pieces, you know, we talked about Badlands and Natural Born Killers. We talked about things like you were talking about Wild at Heart, or then like going into things like Near Dark and The Lost Boys. It's such a wide range of things, but it doesn't feel like any of them necessarily. It's got so many of its own things to say about some of those same themes, and that's, you know, it's a really interesting film for sure. I really like that about it. One other thing I was going to mention, and not really as a puzzle piece necessarily, but the Trent Reznor Atticus Ross score, the closest thing I think I've heard out of Trent Reznor in one of his film score works to a Nine Inch Nails album. Like, it felt like it could have been some of the more atmospheric tracks on the Downward Spiral or something like that.
Oh, you know what movie I thought of too while watching? Because of the 80s and really one scene, I thought of Adventureland.
Oh, I love Adventureland. That movie absolutely rules. Yeah. So much fun. A lot more upbeat, I would say, but certainly the 80s, the 80s, and I could see like if these two, you know, didn't meet the end they do, you know, I could see them like ending up at some like fun jobs or something and making friends like in Adventureland, you know?
You know, I have a theory that, I mean, they don't show her eating him, but like, I have a theory, like, that she doesn't, I mean, it's implied that, most likely implied that she does, but.
Yeah.
I have a theory that she may not have all gone through with it. And, and she just couldn't. And that next shot on the hill is them continuing living life as drifters. And.
That's how a good love story should end, right?
Yeah, but even as drifters, there's a lot of complications to that. And like, who's to say that other cannibals couldn't hunt them down and try to eat them?
Yeah. I mean, Stahlberg's still out there, so.
Yeah, that's true.
With those creepy eyes.
Yeah, I would be I'd be afraid of him.
Yeah, definitely.
And David Gordon Green, for that matter.
And David Gordon Green, absolutely. Looking like a good outback hick. He really rocked that role for sure. So
I don't want to like sound stereotypical, but it's almost like they were kind of poking fun of it. I just had this thought. This takes place in the Reagan era. What if, like, I don't know if this was Guadagnino and the screenwriter, I can't pronounce his last name, David Kajikic, whatever, but
yeah,
I wonder if they were trying to sort of poke fun at like rednecks or hicks in that time period.
Yeah, very possibly. I mean, because, you know, there's a time before cell phones and everything where, like, you know, you get lost in those woods, like, shit's scary, you know.
You know, and you bring up cell phones. Someone, Ryan Verrill from The Disconnected, I think he said that he believes that like most horror movies should, if not all, should take place in the past, because if it's set in the present, things are more convenient, and then, you know.
Yeah, you can get out of any situation a lot easier nowadays. So that makes a lot of sense. I think that's a good place to wrap up Bones and All.
That's a great place to end.
Definitely. Is there another movie you watched recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
Yes. My mom and I just finished watching Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio.
Oh, yeah.
And I absolutely loved it. And I also recently watched on the Sight and Sound Top 100, Sunrise, A Song of Two Lovers. That was brilliant.
Okay. Right on. Yeah, I haven't seen that, but I did watch Del Toro's Pinocchio, and I loved it. And we actually have an episode coming
up
soon.
My mom and I were cheering.
Oh, it's so good. So much fun. Well, right on. Josie, tell people where they could find you and your YouTube channel and all that.
Well, my full name is Josephine DeMarco on YouTube, just my full name. And then you can follow me on Twitter at Josie Poetess. And you can follow me on TikTok at Josie Film and Lit.
Great. Well, like we said earlier, this was a lot of fun. And definitely, I would love to get you back on again sometime.
Great.
That's Serena over there.
And that's Naomi, and we are the hosts of Weird Mythic Podcast.
Yes, we are. Our show, Weird Mythic, covers stories about cryptids, which is what brought us together to create the show. But we also like to talk about anything paranormal and strange that happens in the world.
We post episodes every Sunday on different topics, and we would love to have more listeners. We're on all podcast platforms, and you can find us on all social media sites as well. Give us a listen, send us some personal stories to share on the show, and we will love you forever.
Yes, we will. We would love some personal stories, some cryptid encounters, and we hope that you listen and tune into the show.
You can listen to Weird Mythic Podcasts wherever you get your podcast fix.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Bones and All. Thank you to Josie for joining me on that one. And thank you to all of you for listening. If you're enjoying what we do here on Piecing It Together, make sure you are subscribed wherever it is that you listen to podcasts. And we'd really appreciate your 5-star ratings if you could take a minute out and do that, whether that's on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, Good Pods, Podchaser. If there's a 5-star button, maybe even type a little review. I would really appreciate that. You could also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod, join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. And don't forget about our Patreon, the Produced by David Rosen Patreon, where I post bonus and advanced content from Piecing It Together. I currently have an episode on Black Adam, an episode on Strange World, and one on Broker. And I might have one or two others in there. Also, a preview of my new album is in there, which, by the way, my new album, More Content, on pre-order right now. The album comes out December 30th. It's awesome, guys. I'm so excited to finally have this thing out, and I've started shipping copies to people who have ordered copies. You can order them on Bandcamp, davidrosen.bandcamp.com. The album will be streaming on December 30th, and I will be posting on December 30th a commentary track of the album here on Piecing It Together, so you can hear it and hear some background stories on the album. But yeah, I'm really excited for everyone to hear it. So that is coming soon. Check out the Patreon. It's produced by David Rosen. Patreon.com/bydavidrosen. Lots of great content from Piecing It Together, awesome movie year, and from my music career. And while I do have the new album coming out, I wanted to play a track not from that album, but one that I thought would be a really good fit for Bones and All. I've played this before. It's been a while, I think. It's called A Stranger, and this song is from my album, An Unseen Sky, and I've always loved this song, and I feel like this one would fit the vibe of Bones and All. So we'll go out with A Stranger. Hope you enjoy it. We'll be back with more Piecing It Together real soon. We'll be right back.
an All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.